This is a little tidbit about Madrid, which naturally most people don't know about. And mainly because the place I am talking about, or I'm going to talk about, is so far outside the center, no one really knows about it, what it's all about. Unless for some reason you live there or were in the area for an extended period of time, that person happened to be me, which is why I took an interest in it. So let me explain here. When I first came to Madrid as a college student in the late 1980s, I was placed with a host family, which to this day continues to be my Spanish family. We got along that well, and we have been together through many, many good moments and even a few bad moments, the way all families will experience. The family lived in the northern part of the Paseo de la Castellana, which, as I always say, explain, is that major avenue that runs north-south in Madrid and basically divides it in half. It was just a block south of this square called the Plaza de Castilla. Back then, it was within the city limits, but it was kind of at the northern edge. Buildings there were normal, more modern than sort of the old part of town, but streets were normal, stores were pretty much what you'd find in most neighborhoods. It was a nice place to live, and I was lucky, no doubt. But nothing about it seemed particularly remarkable. Now, I do recall a couple of the stores having signs in English, and for some reason, I can particularly recall the barber shop. And I was a little bit surprised by that. I didn't really understand why that was, but I didn't ask any questions because my Spanish was so awful back then. I don't think I could have gotten a coherent question out. And even if I had, I probably wouldn't understand what they were talking about when they explained it to me, if there was an explanation. But there so happens to be one, because I also remember the Spanish parents telling me that Americans used to live in that building and in that area. And in fact, in the building that we were in, there used to be a chapel on the ground floor. It was there provisionally. Basically, it was a space. It was a room. And it was apparently sort of a multi-denominational room where different services were held at different times and even in different languages. Why and what they were doing there, I didn't really understand at first. But the answer was as simple as it was astounding. You see, for about 15 years, the district really and truly became a kind of mini colony for Americans who were stationed at the military air force base in Torrejón de Ardoz. Torrejón is about 15 kilometers to the east of Madrid, and it's basically right next to Madrid's airport. That was back in the 1950s. And this was a time when Franco's regime was desperately trying to get international recognition and break through the international isolation that it found itself in. And when it came to seeking the support of the United States, what better way than by allowing the Americans to set up camp at a time when the Cold War was really cranking up. This was thanks to an accord known as the Pact of Madrid, and it was signed in 1953. Spain would get military and economic aid in exchange for letting the Americans use three different air force bases, Torrejón, the one I just mentioned, Zaragoza, Morón, which is outside of Seville, and a naval base called Rota, which is in the south of Spain in the province of Cádiz. So it was kind of a Marshall Plan for Spain, but with benefits, benefits for the United States. And it turns out that many of the families of military personnel, apparently many were or most were members of the Marine Corps, were housed in this block of buildings. It became known as the Edificio Corea, or the Korea Building, and it was dubbed that because that was the war that was going on at the time. And There was nothing around that building, at least at first. You see pictures of it from the 1950s, and it's just this vast open land and this building right in the middle of nowhere. The building I lived in was in the sort of the second phase of that block. It was part of that whole complex. But sometimes when people talked about the original Edificio Correa, they referred to another building that was on the opposite corner. But still, the whole complex was basically the Edificio Correa, the Correa building. Now, the servicemen and their families were keen to enjoy the lifestyle that they were used to back home, a lifestyle not easily replicated in the Spain of the 1950s. And that meant food, shopping, barber shops were needed. Apparently, the most important store in the block or on that block was one called the Economato. And it was in, yeah, it's hard to explain. I know what it's like because I've seen it, or I've seen the space myself. The whole block in the on the inside had this huge space, and it's still there. But that's where they had this sort of enormous supermarket slash general store where American families, and apparently only American families, from what I've been told, could purchase products from the States. Because I knew this family and they were old enough to be around when this was going on. And they kept talking about the Economato, but no one, not one of them, had ever been inside. And so the Spaniards who lived there could sort of only look on from the outside with a degree of envy. And so there was sort of this community that developed there for many years, and many of the American traditions, burgers, Thanksgiving, the 4th of July, Christmas trees, and so on, became sort of familiar sights there. But that wasn't all. The soldiers also wanted to have a good time, and you had bars and pubs and discos, basically debauchery galore. And the neighborhood earned the name La Costa Fleming, or the Fleming Coast, named after Dr. Fleming Street in honor of the discoverer of penicillin. And it was also where many of the bars were. So that very same street earned a dubious reputation for sort of relentless partying, sordid behavior, prostitution, and not the kind you'd find street walking, but rather sort of escort services. And it sort of became known as a kind of sin city within a city which tried to pretend that it was sinless. So everything sort of had to be clandestine. There was even a novel called Madrid, Costa Fleming, written about it, and I think they even made a movie based on the novel. So this was a pretty well-known party area in the 60s and 70s. Now, as you can imagine, the Franco regime was not terribly impressed and even considered ways to try to get rid of all this sort of hanky-panky, disreputable conduct that seemed to go against everything it represented, or at least tried to represent. But at the same time, keeping Uncle Sam happy was a priority. So they made a point of it to contain this sort of madness to the zone and then look the other way. Now, if you see this area now, it's almost impossible to imagine it the way they say it was. Although, friends of mine will say it was a fairly normal neighborhood in many ways. It was just sort of at nighttime where things would get out of hand. But it really was there. Eventually, the U.S. High Command began to question the wisdom of the personnel becoming too integrated into Spanish life. At least that's what I've been told. So they decided to split up the community, and they sent families to other parts of Madrid and even back to the base. Others, though, apparently stayed on, and even some married into Spanish families. And life went on. And then in 1990 or 91, by this time I was back in Spain, the owners of the building warned the tenants that both the building and the residents were in peril The culprit, a condition called aluminosis, it's a Spanish term for a malady that affects concrete. Now, if I've got this right, the humidity and the heat over time changed the molecular structure of the concrete because of the mix it was using, and would make the beams potentially weaker and obviously susceptible to disaster. And I remember hearing about this on the news and listening to the reactions. The claim by the owners was suspect, as the tenants sensed that what these owners were trying to do was look for an excuse to tear it down and build something fancier and more expensive. Many of the residents had what they call an old rent lease. These were leases signed between 1950 and 1985 that put a lot of restrictions on the landlords. When renting out, it was almost impossible for them to raise the rents. It was all controlled and regulated. Some of them apparently still exist today, but they are disappearing. In any event, an association of tenants was formed and it went to action, and they tried to block the building from being torn down. They even went to court and a number of agreements were made. Now, the original Korea building, the first phase that I was telling you about, was eventually knocked down and rebuilt as a very modern structure with a wavy glass facade. Companies and major stores have replaced the homes and the brothels. And the rest of the block was reinforced, and the residents, including my Spanish mom, still live there. What little I could perceive from the 1980s about this previous time, this time when the Americans were there, and by now has almost completely disappeared. The neighborhood has changed so much that even the smaller mom-and-pop stores have given way to high-end restaurants. Speaking of which, the only tangible leftover from that time that I can think of off the top of my head is a classic American-style restaurant called The Knight and Squire on Felix Boy Street. It opened in 1966 as the Casa de la Hamburguesa, but then changed to The Knight and Squire in 1971. From what I understand, this was the first hamburger restaurant or hamburger joint in Madrid, and it still exists today. I've been there several times. I don't go there very often now since I don't live in that part of Madrid anymore. It changed owners, I believe, a couple of years back, I think just after the pandemic. But anyway, the place still exists. It's still the same name. Everything about it is pretty much the same. And it is a part of Spanish history in its own curious way. And the rest of the Costa Fleming is a pretty neighborhood with excellent dining options. Things have changed a lot since the 1960s, definitely. But there was once a time when scores of American families actually lived there and created what I guess we could call a Little America. And it's an interesting history, and certainly something you wouldn't expect. And that'll be all for today. We hope you have enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain-Demain. Please feel free to leave us with any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain-Demain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.